Brought to you by the new Bose A20 Aviation Headset. Bose is now introducing their most advanced pilot headset ever, the new Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides significantly greater noise reduction than currently available, along with improved comfort, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. On June 1st of 2009, Air France Flight 447, an Airbus A330 carrying 228 people out of Rio for Paris, disappeared into the Atlantic, somewhere hundreds of miles off the coast of Brazil. 9 months later, investigators had narrowed down their search area at times to a grid of 770 square miles of mountainous seafloor, ranging to depths of 14,000 feet. The search area was more than 21 trillion times the size of the prize of the flight's critical data and voice recorders. Today we're speaking with Mike Purcell of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. Mike is the chief of sea search operations for the mission that found and recovered those recorders. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Now, what does Woods Hole do, and how did you become involved in searching for a missing airliner?
Woods Hole is a big nonprofit institution dedicated to ocean research and engineering. And my group here has developed autonomous underwater vehicles, the REMUS vehicles, that were considered a good search tool for locating the airplane wreckage and then the black boxes.
Are you better equipped for this sort of thing than the military?
I think that we have a lot of experience operating the vehicles in on big searches, and Woods Hole as an institution has a lot of oceanographic experience, so we are a good candidate to be involved in the search.
Where does the funding come from for an effort like this, and in this case, how much was needed?
To do this search, the funding, you know, came from France, I think some from the government, some from Air France and Airbus. For us to go out there and do a search for 36 days costs about, between $2.5 and $3 million.
Now, the first rescue aircraft wasn't launched until about 9 hours after the crew's last transmission, and floating wreckage wasn't spotted until it had been drifting for about 5 days. The recorders we were looking for, the black boxes as they're colloquially called, they have emergency beacons. Why didn't we have a better idea of where the jet came down?
Well, I think that the flight and the airplane continued to send out ACARS messages for over 4 minutes after it had transmitted its last known position. So it could have flown a pretty big or far distance in that time frame, and so that made a large area for in which the search had to be conducted.
Were you involved in the search during the time when the recorders would still have been emitting signal?
No, we did not get involved until phase three in 2010. And at that point, the recorder batteries would have been expired. So it was mostly use acoustic side-scan sonar sensors to locate the plane wreckage and then do a search to find the black boxes.
On each pass of one of these things, what sort of area are you covering or ruling out?
Well, each time a vehicle goes in the water, it swims about 15 square miles. So in if we were operating with three vehicles, we can cover about 45 square miles in a day. So to do the whole, to complete a search of the entire area, it would take over 100 days.
Now, at whose invitation and what sort of hierarchy was set up with the organizations involved in the search?
We participated in two phases, so the hierarchy changed during the two phases. But initially, after we helped them do some modeling work to help determine the best places to look in phase three, we were hired through Seabed Worker, one of the vessels that the BEA had hired to do the phase three work. We had a direct contract with Airbus and Air France for phase four, which is the search that we just finished here in 2011.
Now, if you would describe the search environment, I mean, physically, when you entered the equation, what were you looking at?
Well, when we entered the equation, you know, we're looking at a last known position, and then we're looking at potentially an area that stretches out 40 nautical miles, a circular area, that's 5,000 square miles in size, and it covers an area of the seafloor that's very, very rough, includes part of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and we're going to have to deal with depth changes from about 2,000 to 4,000 meters, and in many places they happen over very short distances, so there's a lot of steep mountainsides.
You mentioned some of the hardware you were using in the search. What kind of challenges did it face in the environment that you were in?
We were using Remus 6000 autonomous underwater vehicles, and they will work in depths to 6,000 meters, so the depths here were not really a concern. During phase three, we did two legs. We had three vehicles during the first leg and two vehicles during the second leg, and then this year during phase four, we had three vehicles. The biggest challenge is the changing seafloor and dealing with the mountains and having the vehicle swim up and down the mountains, swim along the sides of the mountains, and collecting quality data when the vehicle is swimming over the mountains. The vehicles are released on the surface. They're not attached to the ship with a cable, and we get the data back when the vehicles complete their 20-hour mission, and we recover the vehicles back onto the ship to prepare them for the next mission.
What did things look like? What was the outlook in your point of view when you began getting involved in this process? Were you optimistic? Did you think it was a needle in a haystack, or is that your business, finding needles in haystacks?
Well, I think that when we got involved, we knew that people were very serious about wanting to find the plane. I think there's a lot of reasons to find out what happened for the families, and then the technical aspects of knowing what happened to the plane. So we knew it was an important project. It's certainly a big area. They had done quite a bit of searching, at least listening for the pingers during the phase one and two, but we knew it was going to be a difficult search.
How do you begin the process of narrowing down the search area? Is it just a matter of running tracks back and forth and disqualifying areas, or do you have to go over some areas again?
The BEA sort of defined the search areas, or the area that we would, the order in which we would search. And we start off basically, as you suggested in your question, with covering small segments of that area. Each vehicle can go down and swim about 15 square miles, or cover about 15 square miles during each mission. Sometimes if the terrain's pretty flat, then we can cover more area. Each time the vehicle's recovered, we look at the data and we evaluate our coverage from the mission and determine whether we have to go back over and cover some openings. Our goal was to make sure no uncovered area was bigger than 200 by 200 meters. So that's a pretty small area, and with the changing terrain on the seafloor, the acoustic sensors, the data would often have shadows that would be, you know, at least that size. So we did have to change our tactics a little bit and recover some of the areas more than one time.
I don't want to give people the impression that the search was going on continuously over nearly 2 years before the recorders were found. How many days were actually spent on and in the water looking?
Let's see, in 2010, we spent about 45 days looking on two different legs. And then this year, we found first evidence of the plane debris on our ninth day. And then we spent six more days, first off, confirming that, and then collecting photographic and high-frequency side-scan data to help the Phase 5 search, which involves some remotely operated vehicles that are tethered and have direct feedback to the operators on the ship and can be controlled by the operators on the ship. And those are actually the vehicles that have recovered the black boxes.
Can you describe to me what it was like when you actually found the debris field?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We first find the debris field with an acoustic sensor, and it's basically a strong return that you're just looking at on a computer screen, but it's not you're not sure it's it. We thought it was it. We had high probability, But we had to send another vehicle down there to take pictures to confirm that it was the wreckage. So there was about a 24-hour period before we confirmed that it was the plane wreckage. When we were recovering the vehicle that was coming back with the confirmation, it all of a sudden got bad. We had some bad weather, a bad squall, so we had to delay the recovery. So it just sort of added to a little bit of anxiety level on the ship. We were all very happy, though, when we were able to confirm that it was the plane wreckage.
Should we all expect that in the future now you can find these things if they go down in the ocean with very little trace, or was this luck?
I think that we can expect to find things if they go down in the ocean. As it turns out, that the plane debris field was in a very flat area, so it was easy to detect once we went over the swam the vehicle past it. It's possible that the debris field could have been in a area of terrain that was really steep or very difficult for the vehicle to find, but I think that that actual area is a very small percentage of where we're looking. And the second thing is there probably will not be as areas that are as bad, as rough and as steep as this one. The chances of it being the same as this are slim.
So in the end, you found what is roughly, well, you mentioned to me the size before. It's what, 15 inches by?
The recorder is 15 inches by 6 inches, maybe by 6 inches tall. We actually found the plane wreckage, which was spread out. The big pieces were spread out over a 600 meter by 200 meter area. And we then took about 85,000 pictures of that debris field and some of the larger area around it. And so our pictures are taken from 10 meters. So we weren't actually able to confirm that that the black box was there with our pictures. But they provided a very good guide for the ROV operators to when they went back out there on phase five and on the operation that continues today, in finding the recorders.
In the end, you took a 5,000 square mile, nautical mile area,
yep,
and found something that's about 1 square foot big.
That's what has happened.
Now what? Is mission accomplished? Are you finished up at the site, or is Woods Hole going to continue working there?
Woods Hole, I think, is complete. We've completed our work there. The French have hired someone else to do the ROV survey, and Phoenix team, and they're obviously doing a good job because they found both the data recorders. And I don't think there will be reason to go back to the site, but if necessary, we would talk with the French about what they wanted to do.
We've been speaking with Mike Purcell of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, the chief of sea search operations for the mission that found and recovered the voice and data recorders of Air France Flight 447. This has been Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. Thanks for listening.
Brought to you by the new Bose A20 aviation headset, Bose is now introducing their most advanced pilot headset ever, the new Bose A20 aviation headset. It provides significantly greater noise reduction than currently available, along with improved comfort, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.